kingly confidence, masculine mastery, fearless freedom. Welcome to the podcast that supports you to show up in the world as the unapologetic, unfuckwithable, free-loving king you were born to be. Join Masculine Mastery Coach Mark Usher on a journey to releasing conditioned stories of unnecessary stress, struggle, and shame, while unlocking unlimited levels of inner peace, power, and prosperity in every area of your life. Fearless freedom comes to you as you self-authorize your masterpiece life, knowing in your truth, you move with nothing to prove. You are enough. And now, Mark.
At the core of every single man alive, the core of our masculine essence is this inner yearning for absolute freedom. That's the core of masculine essence. It's the core of masculine essence within a female body. This is a campfire for powerful men, kings of freedom from around the planet, where we come and join together at this deep, intimate conversation together. The core essence of masculinity is this striving and yearning for absolute freedom, freedom from all constraint. And within that yearning, the ultimate freedom, in actual fact, there is no freedom until the topic of embracing death and accessing and at least approaching the topic. And it's step by step. It's the ultimate freedom, but that means it's the ultimate challenge to access that level of embodied freedom. There is no absolute fearless freedom without approaching and embracing and kissing and learning to hug and surrender to the topic of accepting death, the reality of death. So often it's completely negated and avoided in modern culture, where psychologically it's like our economic system, social system, the marketing, the wheels of marketing. If you look at the base of them, so much of the marketing drive psychologically is to negate pain, is to take away the pain of debt, to take away the pain of debt, of change, of... It's very much focused on that. You know, there's so much of the omnipresent, you know, there's this focus on youth. You know, your peak youth, and you don't age. Anti-aging creams, there's the debt of destruction. You know, if you have an accident, you don't have to suffer that pain. You don't have to suffer the debt of any change outside of your control. And so many billions are spent by us as a collective consciousness in trying to escape this pain. And the pain of debt, there's physical debt, but there's debt in the sense of an ending of a certain way of life. There's the debt of your passing from the vigorous vitality of youth. As you know, as a young man in your early, mid, late 20s, you know, early 30s, you're at the peak of that vitality, the peak of strength, the peak of physical fitness and performance. There's the debt of the ending of within this social system. And there again, it's within a... It's no sign of health to be profoundly at home within such a sick society, to inaccurately to paraphrase Krishnamurti's commentary on this modern society of ours. You know, there's the passing and the accepting and surrendering to the debt of your role within society, you know, retirement. The debt of your... the role and the purpose that you had within a society that by and large suggests that, oh well, mid-60s, you know, that's the time that you must retire. Retire from what? Retire from a job. But that's a modern construct. So there's so many different layers of debt, The ultimate one that we try to bypass and ignore is, of course, physical death, and all other fears of death and passing are psychologically at the root based upon that ultimate fear. So within this conversation today, it's my intention to bring this conversation to the forefront of your mind, and in doing so, I do also want to bow and honor certain wounds that you may have experienced growing up in your sacred journey as a man thus far in your life, you know, in accepting and having had maybe debt forced upon your path at times when maybe you weren't fully ready and the society, the tribe around you maybe weren't able to support you. So within this conversation here, I really want to intimately bow and honor your experience, and I also just want to slow down and create a safe and sacred space and invite you to honor whatever comes up, to honor it with love and acceptance. And it's my intention that in actually approaching this such a deeply intimate topic, an important topic, and as a result of the profundity of this topic for every single one of us in life, it can be the most triggerable one. So lean into the campfire. You are supported energetically by myself from a profound depth of love and honoring and acceptance of yourself, but also energetically, you know, there's the growing tribe of men around the planet that, albeit you mightn't listen at the exact same time and it mightn't be live, you know, together in person, but there is a brotherhood there that energetically is supporting you. And energetically, I imagine quite a lot of you listening in will have, you know, a parent that passed at a time when it was way too early for you and way too early for them, or a loved one, and it's irrespective of the age. It can be, you know, that grandparent that, you know, society could say, well, they lived a good long life, so it mightn't even be in terms of age that it was a tragedy. They might have passed in a deeply peaceful way, but for you, your relationship with that person or many people might bring up quite a bit for you. So, yeah, I just really want to put that at the forefront. I also want to lead that at the time of recording here, within my own personal life, I've mentioned it in previous episodes, only the source energy, God, Buddha nature, life itself, the physical body, and whatever understanding one or paradigm one may come from, only that force of life can decide. But the timing, I'm doing this episode now because my own sacred, beautiful mother is coming to what appears to be the very near the end of her physical life, in a very heroic experience that she's been having with stomach cancer. So I'm speaking from an exquisitely open-hearted space. And from this space, you know, that I am experiencing this tsunami, this initiatory wave, this tsunami within my own life, you know, I speak from here. So it's from wholehearted love. Personally speaking, I hold my hand up. I've had the great blessing. I'm 38 years old. You know, there was a friend in secondary school that committed suicide, and that was deeply, a very deeply and profoundly impactful experience, very challenging experience to go through individually and collectively. So that has been my closest experience. I've had the grace and good fortune, for whatever reasons, to be 38 years old at the first really close person to me. Many of you maybe have had more years beyond 38 before facing this, and quite a number of you, as I have realized the universal nature of of embracing and learning to hug into a relationship with that. So many people, when I reached out to my community, and I just thought when I was overcoming or learning to embrace the first initial intense waves of grief that I was facing within myself, just learning and leaning into the universal nature of this, so many men, so many people have had to face it at exquisitely vulnerable early stages in their life, and by extension, early stages in their parents' life. So, yeah, I just want to lead with that it's definitely a deeply intimate conversation for myself to be having and to share with you vulnerably and with as much courage and heart and openness and radical honesty that I commit to bring with you. That said, you know, it's Kings of Freedom. There's no freedom without embracing this topic, because in many senses, you can only embrace and embody full fearless freedom in life in proportion to your willingness to embrace and face the omnipresent reality of death. The great mystical teachings all point to this sort of, there's the relative reality of duality. There's life and there's death, but from the absolute level, there's no distinction. Life is death and death is life. And it's only a mental construct that creates such pain and such anguish when we separate the two. There's life, heart beating. There's death, heart stops beating. No breath. You know, life, breath and heartbeat. Death is end of heartbeat and breath. And it's like this, it's catastrophic. One is light and one is dark. And yet in the light and the darkness, as you learn when you go into deeper shadow work, there's no separation. The pain of life is when we pretend to separate light from the darkness. You know, yin and yang. In this topic of relating, learning to relate with death, ultimately it's learning to relate with life. Fearless freedom from the masculine mastery perspective. And repetition is mastery, again and again, bringing us home to the fundamental practice of masculine mastery. On the masculine path towards fearless freedom is embodied consciousness. That is the core masculine practice in this lifetime. There again, it's not the core male practice. There are plenty of core feminine practices for you to do, for me to do, for us individually and collectively to do as well. But when you talk about the core masculine practice, not male, not female, the core masculine practice is the practice of being present. And that being present can be defined as being embodied consciousness. An embodied consciousness is a present moment phenomenon. Consciousness itself. Of course, you can think from it. Consciousness is this life force, this soul, this energy from where thoughts and emotions arise. But consciousness itself is rooted and only ever exists in the present moment. And when in the present moment, there is no such thing as death. Within the present moment, you know, where the greatest suffering, there again, leaning into some of the greatest mystical traditions and teachings of the past, present and the future, is that actually there is no past and there is no future. There's just the pristine, perfect now. And the only suffering our minds come up with are when we suffer sadness at looking at the past and griefs and resentments that show up of what we could have done and should have done and what others did to us And this pain of reflecting upon the past, and then the anxiety of projecting to the future, of some future that will take your happiness away, your freedom away, and we have this anxiety of a projected future, but it's all mind created. The core masculine practice is coming back to the present moment. In leaning into this, experientially, it's like, you know, there's core, if you want to say, quite actually the ultimate most profound philosophies are just coming into the present moment and being embodied consciousness and the fearless freedom that comes from that. Yet on a practical level, in the embracing of death, I've, in my own human journey and embracing the news of hearing, is the type of phone call that one never wants to receive from a parent, from a loved one, the type of phone call of the diagnosis that, and that phone call that my mother made to me so courageously and with such grace. I bring that memory with me for life. But in learning to embrace and relate with that as it was brought into my reality involuntarily that day, you know, my commitment that day, I remember, I shed tears when I got off the phone from my mother, and I came up, I had a couple of moments with myself, and I shared it with my queen, with Matilda. And what came to me was this deep inner commitment of this initiatory journey that I would ride out, this tsunami, as I've been calling it. It's like learning to ride a tsunami. I mean, it's exhilarating when you stay on board, on your surfboard, on that tsunami, but if you come off, it's a tsunami. You're going to crash and burn coming off. It's been quite exhilarating and liberating to learn to ride on the top of this tsunami. But my commitment was to embrace the intensity of the journey, but not make it hard. And I've learned that the making it hard, and, you know, in all of this, you know, some of you might be very just full on, you're like death, the death of a loved one. Maybe some of you are actually going through this right now. You might relate with it on very much on a relative sense. It's like, yes, death, that topic. But I also just bring it into a more universal level of just your embrace with life. You know, life itself, to live open-heartedly, vulnerably, with your nervous system completely, impeccably open to the full range of emotions and feeling the full range of emotions, that's a rare state of being. Definitely for men, but it extends into women. It's a humanity-wide modern phenomenon. We're living wholeheartedly. There has been so much collective trauma. And trauma is, by extension, the secondary effect of trauma is closing off to the full range of feelings. My commitment to live the full intensity of it has been to remain open-hearted to the full feelings of grief as they emerge, the full feelings of sadness, of anger, of, and also the other side, you know, which has been the surprising revelation, is the immense feelings of love and ecstasy and bliss that actually have opened up the far side of the waves of grief. You know, there can be noted, almost like in modern culture, you know, there's such a tendency, we talk about facade here quite a bit, you know, these roles that we play, we've been conditioned to play as men, but there can be, there's so often, there's these, like, you know, when you're embracing the death of a loved one, and you're in and around that sort of, that environment, there can be this role where it's like, well, you have to be sad. Like, dare you ever embrace it with great playfulness, with humor, with joy, with embodied radical love? You know, it's like, it's almost like, is that allowed? And as much as humanly available, I've been embracing the fullness of it, but the fullness at times has been, you know, the full loving splendor of seeing this spiritual awakening as my mother has embodied so much incredible, unique, ferocious courage in embracing and surrendering to this journey, to see the exquisite level of luminous love in her eyes as she sits there. It's so amazing, and it's like hats off and such honoring. And I'm taking so much love and joy and courage and strength and fortitude from seeing her embodied example. It's such an example, an exemplary example. That's a bit of a two words pointing to the exact same embodiment. Such an example of spiritual mastery in a way in how she's embracing this. So, in embracing the intensity, I've come upon, and you know, I touch base with yourselves in embracing. Maybe there's grief coming up as you listen in, or in previous or current waves of personal grief that you have been experiencing. In my own unfolding, evolving, deep learning journey within the last few months, in embracing this ever-changing situation, I have come to have very deep insights and learnings about the nature of grief. I almost am bringing into question, is grief actually a separate emotion? Does it have a right to exist, to be defined as a separate emotion? Because what has been coming up to me, and I've learning, you know, I talk about kingly confidence within the language of the movement of Kings of Freedom. Kingly confidence, masculine mastery, fearless freedom are three like pillars. Kingly confidence, confidere, with immense trust in myself and in the universe and in the wisdom that comes through. And I know, I reflected back, I know every single one of you have amazing insights and a psyche that produces this wisdom. And my encouragement is to trust those insights. In trusting that level of trust in my intuition, my inner voice within, making profound sense of this experience, my relationship with grief has been such that when what I would call grief, just to have, you know, I'm bringing into question the meaning of the word, but what you'd call grief, and the expression for myself is my throat. Long-standing experience with what you might call asthma, you know, my throat chakra, that's where it would tighten up for me. As being the youngest of three boys and in many different experiences growing up, a big part of the trauma for myself was the struggle in finding my voice. So definitely, you know, grief for me, overwhelming emotion for me, has always tended to be a tightening up of the throat. Maybe you can relate with that. You know, the classic lump in the throat. I sort of humorously, bringing humor to it, it's like I have playfully started relating with two different fruit and vegetables in this journey. Such as the intensity of this showing up in my throat, which is like, I playfully say, it's like when a wave of grief comes to me, it's like I play with a walnut. There's like a walnut sized lump in my throat that if I don't slow down and consciously drop into breathing deeper in that wave and opening up my chest and my heart and softening into that wave rapidly, that walnut sized lump in my throat becomes an all out turnip. I don't know if you know what a turnip is, but a turnip is a big, badass, massive lump of hardness of a classic Irish vegetable that goes into lovely Irish stews and soups, and it's a forlorn, hated, tasted vegetable for so many in younger years and in childhood, because it's a very strong flavoured root vegetable. But anyway, it's a big lump of a vegetable. So it's like, when I, in the early days, you know, I would try and maybe speak true and like sort of force my words out, that walnut would just become an all-on turnip. But embracing the intensity of, I've learned to just, the walnut comes up my throat, to commit to just dropping in, going into silence, coming into my body. Whoever, and it's, you know, in private company, there's not a lot to be spoken. But if, when I have been in company of other people, you know, speaking about my mother, speaking about my personal journey with it, and the grief comes, just dropping in, allowing myself those moments. Sometimes it could be a couple of minutes, other times it's a couple of seconds. It does not matter. That ferocious self-love and acceptance, just softening into it. The far side of what would be, I can only describe as this gripping, trying to find the correct word, it's almost like at times, like a feeling, like an annihilating pain in my throat and taking over my body. But with a level of rapidness, of speed, that on softening into it and just allowing my nervous system just be with that feeling, just not negating it, not fighting through it, not avoiding the words, you know, just dropping into it and allowing it be, truly allowing it be, that this almost miraculous melting away, a dissolving of that pain, of this intense lump where it's like just closing down in my throat and maybe down into my chest, that gripping, annihilating feeling of pain would dissolve, but dissolve into this all-pervasive, open-hearted love. I've had tears in my eyes of love every single time I've softened into that grief, of love for my mother, of love of life, of love of the exquisite gift that life is. It has been a spiritual revelatory experience for me to soften into that, which from a deep philosophical perspective, I embrace philosophy not as a conceptual mind-led rational journey where you read a philosophy and then it's like, I will take this philosophy on of Marcus Aurelius, of an Eckhart Tolle, I will take this on and this is my philosophy. No, that's mind-led. It's like philosophy is a felt, embodied experience. And the philosophers of old and ancient Greece, it's like you were not considered or honored, or you would not be called a philosopher if it was just a rational experience for you. You know, the philosophers in ancient Greece, you had to live it. You had to get into the thick of emotions. You had to really go there. It was a non-conceptual experience. The concepts were birthed from embodied, full, open-hearted experience. And that's how philosophers of old were defined and honored and acknowledged within their community. So this relationship with grief, it's brought into question for myself. What is grief, the experience of grief, truly? And what has emerged for me is this intuitive feeling that what we call grief is actually, maybe not entirely, or there's no absolute truth, but I do believe there's the majority of what we call grief is a traumatized, in my experience, has been the traumatized nervous system of myself just being so unaccustomed to feeling the tsunami, the ocean of love, of blissful, heart-opening, spiritual love of life, that in the reflections on my mother, in the reflections of the exquisite preciousness of memories of, you know, these moments gone past, 38 years of like love-packed, beautiful, tender moments of love, and seeing her now and just a celebration of such, that the grief is almost like when this tsunami of love is coming through in those moments, that the grief is just the nervous system shutting down, going, I'm so unaccustomed to such celebratory expansive love that we need to shut this down. And the pain Grief is like the pain within my nervous system, the felt experience of so much love coming through, you know, so many thoughts, and it's like, wow, fucking wow, what love, what embodiment of what a mother, what experiences. That the grief, the pain of the grief, is merely just this fire hydrant of love wanting to force its way into expression, but the grief is just like, I can't contain, this is overwhelming, there's just so much emotion here, there's so much love, I don't know how. I've, through a traumatized upbringing, in, look, it's like such a beautiful family, but it's in a society that just does not, like, because of its avoidance of death, thus the avoidance of life, the full love of life has been, like, conditioned out of us, that my nervous system is just like, how can I fucking contain? I'm out of practice. That young, vibrant, fearless child that sang and danced and climbed and shouted and screamed and rolled, that was sort of slowly but surely edged out. And Kings of Freedom is actually the reawakening, the reconnecting with that spiritual energy. But I learned subconsciously to suppress that love of life, to suppress that outlandish, completely radically free expression of love. I learned to start holding that back because that level of love was sort of too much for people around me, too much for people at school, too much for, you know, the organized religion was too much. I touch base with you in your childhood. Have you learned? Did you have experiences where, you know, your radically confident love-filled voice and laughter and singing and dancing and your, you know, ultra-courageous, heroic ideas of what you would bring to life, that you would do this and you would go on that adventure and you would have this impact in the world. Have you had the experience where maybe small background, but just a multitude of thousands of times I've been told, oh, well, you know, you're too big for your boots, or, you know, would you quieten down, and singer, oh, just, you're never sure, you'll get no career at that, or would you quieten down that singing, or your dancing, or your vibrancy and your humour and your full radical love-induced feeling of life. Have you had the experience where that level of embodied love just wasn't allowed? You know, you go to school, full radical love as a young boy, your nervous system is kicking and fighting and wanting to run and scream and climb and get, like, you know, learn about life, but getting radically stuck in warrior style, like days of old. But within a formal education system, no, that level of love and a young boy, you know, with learning about life and rugged masculine practices and ways of living, that embodied warrior spirit from a young age, young boys do not fit into the modern education system at all. And that's love. That's our expression of love. That warrior, that heart warriorship. So I bring that back home to you. You know, we're talking about debt. There's a physical debt and all these layers of it. But there's also, you know, embracing the debt of certain parts of us, or the temporary debt, and it's now the resurrection. You know, I love Joseph Campbell, the mythologist, very famous for his incredible work of coming, bringing together all the traditions of the world, of storytelling, of days gone by in ancient days, and piecing it all together and just seeing the commonality that there's the hero's journey at the basis of all of these mythical, mystical traditions and storytellings of, from all cultures around the world. He one of his teachings or writings is that there's no resurrection without a crucifixion. So there again, it's this heart warriorship of embracing the debt. You know, you've got to crucify and bring to debt, bring to an end a certain part of your persona, a certain part of the facade that you learned to fit in to a society that didn't allow your full outlandish, spiritual, radical aliveness and truth to be fully embraced. You had to sort of fit in to get along. there's a bringing to debt, a crucifying of these parts and these roles that we learn to fit in. The radical fearless freedom, there again, fearless freedom lies beyond the embrace of debt, but it can, the most, you know, the physical debt is one thing, but it's the debt of a part of who you have felt yourself to be for so many years. Embracing the debt of that, and what does that mean to allow your full radical freedom, your full radical love come true? So in this meandering journey, as it so often is, you know, I have like a title written on the page in front of me, Fearless Freedom Lies Beyond the Embrace of Debt. That's it. But you can see the profound nature of how the embrace of debt, it's omnipresent. So coming back on track here, you know, treading it back in, and there is a golden thread throughout all of this, you know, that feeling of grief and the pain of it, I really feel that in a society, if we were, just imagine for a second, it's like a John Lennon moment, imagine if you and I and our children and our family and all the brothers throughout the globe and 10, 13 countries, I don't know, I've seen the analytics, just like all, it's a global movement. The snowball is gathering momentum. But just imagine if all of us individually and collectively were born into a thriving society where immense love of life, immense embodiment, unapologetic embodiment of love was omnipresent. It was the social norm. You grew up in a tribe that loved you and accepted you to the profundity of the unique and genius being that you are, that you knew your truth was safe, that your genius expression was safe and would be nurtured always. And that there was, in the such ferocious love of life, there was a love and a profound acceptance of death, to the point at which it's like, well, everybody is living so profoundly in such expression of love, well, you're not going to really mourn debt because you've lived so freely that there's no regret. In a society where regret, there was so much open-hearted expression that, well, you could, saying goodbye to somebody was not such a tragedy because it's like, well, in my example, it'd be 38 years of just expressing all of this love, open-hearted. It's like, well, I could allow anybody die empty because I emptied my heart empty. On that, I'm actually quite at peace because the last number of years, I have been emptying my heart. There's a deep part of my peace with my mother and with life that I have opened my heart up in the profound work I've been doing. So there is quite a profound peace there in the middle of it all. But bringing it to you, like, can you imagine, you know, living so full of embodied love that death is like, it's just a whatever part of life. It's just, it's part of life. In this, I actually bring in our eldest daughter, Anya. She's 11, but with unschooling, she gets to, fulfill her voracious appetite for wisdom by reading whatever it is that inspires her. And in the full-on embracing of this journey, like her, my mother being her nana, you know, we're living in Ireland, so she's had, we have an Italian link, but being so close to my mother and her nana, she has developed this profound, deep, I definitely say spiritual connection, this loving connection with her nana. This has been a profound journey for herself as well, of course, and by extension to her 7-year-old Elena also. Yet in the embracing of this, there's this book that my queen gifted Anya. She gifted it, just it wasn't actually with any set intent to support Anya through this journey, but it's been stunning to witness and to hear the profundity of acceptance that Anya has learned. And part of that, she told us, this book that Matilda gave her was about this woman's outback walking experience, going on walkabout with a tribe of Aborigines in Australia. And the book details how this ancient tradition, how they relate with debt. And Anya was so at peace, reporting back, so to speak. It's like, wow. You know, I was talking with Matilda and myself there the other day. She's like, wow. You know, in Aborigines, in their tradition, you know, debt, there's no big thing about it. In actual fact, like, you know, when the person, they're so embodied, you know, that when the person comes to the point where they realize, oh, I'm actually really close to debt. First of all, they're so embodied and in tune with their spiritual energy and life force that they know. They don't need a doctor to tell them. They don't need anybody else to tell them. They just, they speak it to the tribe. They say, hey, I really feel that, you know, my body, my spirit is telling me I'm very close to debt. What's the response? It's a full-on party. There's a full-on party. It's like, it's a total embrace and celebration of the life of this person. Everybody, they sit down, they all share at the campfire, and it's, I don't believe it's just over one night, but it's like at the campfire over days, you know, the days and weeks ahead, whatever the time frame is, there's a full conscious, open-hearted expression of love for the person, celebration of memories of times gone by, celebration of the impact of and meaning that they have brought to the tribe and their impact on life. It's full-on celebration. And Anya was just saying, it's like, well, they do that, and then they're still on walkabout, you know, they're living in such a nomadic way that, you know, there's no sitting down and grieving and let's make a bed and let's just stay here in one point for the days or the weeks, and it could be months, as this person dies. There's no heaviness. They just get on with it. Yeah, they might possibly need to go a little bit slower than before, but that's okay. They're okay with the waves of life. And eventually, when the time is right, you know, the person would, with their embodied sensitivity and connection with their spiritual being and life force, would be able to inform the group, I think it's just, there's a couple of days, I'm at the doors of the next life here. And they'd know, it's like, yeah, I today's the day. And they'd go off to sleep that night, and that would be it. And the simplicity of it, you know, Anya has been finding such a profound peace in learning to relate with this, and learning that there is this way. It's a profoundly different way from how modern society, outside of, you know, highly specific areas of the conscious hospice movement, which are doing incredible work within it, but that's still far and away from being mainstream ways of supporting people through this journey. And it's definitely not, you know, a whole life philosophy in relating with debt the whole way along. So, albeit it's deeply valuable for the people that get to, you know, have that level of spiritual support, but it's a philosophical life approach. And this is where the Aborigines, like, their embrace of debt comes from their total comfort of the embrace of the love of the person, of the truth of the person throughout life. So they're able to embrace in a playful, joyful, spiritual way, in a sort of like a whateverness, in this beautifully profound, well, like, whatever, you know, okay, you're dying. Cool, wow, you're an amazing person. It's open-hearted, it's loving. So, yeah, I bring that to the forefront because it's this idea of grief that, you know, that the embrace of debt, of physical debt of a loved one, you know, brings up grief, and it's just, there's this mourning and it's heavy. And I have grieved and I have shed my tears. Of course, of course, of course. That's okay as well. It's not to get that grieving or crying or, you know, a perceived heaviness or a sadness is wrong. But I believe there's a softening available, and I believe that the embrace of wholeheartedly going at life and celebrating our loved ones when they are radically alive, when there's no diagnosis on the horizon, when there's no so-called sad news there within the reality. This is sort of the part of the spiritual meaning and significance that I really wholeheartedly want to gift you, want to remind you, if you know you're living this sort of an open-hearted life. My invitation in listening to this episode is to, you know, intensify that open-hearted engagement with life. You know, slowing down. When I received that phone call, part of the grieving process for me was actually looking back and realizing, wow, you know, there were certain projects, there were certain ways of being that I was putting off. I hadn't been fully embracing. I spoke to this previously. It's like the full embrace economically, you know, just really rooting in and getting stuck in there. And yeah, there was actually maybe family wounds with that. Family wounds that I brought upon myself by interpretation, misinterpretation of days gone by. But embracing with work life, the Kings of Freedom movement, there was an embrace of certain things. I've learned to, there were certain conversations that absolutely needed to be had with my queen. So much incredibly, phenomenally powerful shadow work had been done, but there was deeper layers to be confronted. And in the short two and a half months, so much has been done. I have just used it to reaffirm and recommit to my radical, open-hearted warrior engagement with life, with my life, with my shadow, with where I was unwittingly not going, with the intensity needed to live and die without regret. I speak about living and dying without regret. It's like a core value within Kings of Freedom. What freedom is there if you're living in such a way in lots of aspects, maybe it's a whole life way, or certain aspects where you're living with a lack of intensity that is allowing you minimize and normalize a collection of regrets? So I've been really using this revelatory energy. I've spoken with my mother in this in private. I've had beautiful conversations with her where I said, hey, look at, you know, it's the phone call, it's the news that as a loving son with such a beautiful mother, you never want to get that news. But it's like, you know, let no part of life be in vain. I just, my gift to her was, to my beautiful mother was, hey, it's like, you know, in receiving that news, I have just doubled down, quadrupled down, like a hundredfold down on my gift to you, is like just saying thank you and, you know, that I'm good. You know, it's been ultra intense, but the work I've done with Matilda, the work I've done in, you know, re-establishing things and doing intense shadow work in the intervening 2-3 months has been of profound value and will impact my life forevermore. So it's like my parting gift, my loving gift, is saying, hey, you know, it's a gift that nobody ever wants to unwrap, but in my conscious unwrapping of the intensity of this gift, of hearing this news, of embracing this passing, is like, hey, just to let you know, I'm good. I'm really profoundly good, and I've embraced it in such a way and unwrapped a gift. And it's been so beautiful to share these moments. Some of the most beautiful memories I will take of my mother is actually not old days of the past when, you know, it's very easy to go, oh, well, you know, younger days, Christmas and holidays and, you know, times when she was supporting me and loving me, they're beautiful. But actually some of the most precious memories are actually of her now, in the spiritual splendor of her embodied courage in the embrace. It's some of the most impactful gifts and memories are from the last few weeks. My whole purpose in these podcasts is to serve you. I really hope that you're being served by the embrace and by listening in and this deep, intimate, vulnerable sharing. Yet, I really, you know, the core masculine path to growth is by direct challenge. My direct challenge to you from an open-hearted space of infinite love is to fearlessly challenge you to look at your life and ask yourself this question: where am I lacking urgency? And you can be sure that if you look with real eyes, like honest, radically honest eyes, you will find some part of your existence. I have found in my existence receiving this news where I had a whole life review and went, wow, fuck, yeah, I don't want to minimize and normalize that anymore, where I hadn't been put in urgency. But with radical honesty, guaranteed, you will find some element of your existence where, you know, just going with the busyness of life, the sort of, you know, the comfort, this comfortable zone where we're not embracing life, we're not fully practicing that this day could be our last. This day could be the last day of somebody we love. You know, it mightn't be you. Maybe you're fit and healthy and you knock out perfectly another 60, 70, 80, 100 years, 20 years, depending on your life, whatever, but it could be epic years. But somebody else, their life might end, or they, you could get a phone call about from them. My question, and like why this is so potent, is the in the embracing of death, asking the question, where in my life, where in your life are you not showing up with urgency? Where are you lacking urgency? You know, it could be great intentions. The road to hell is paved with great intentions. Remembering that on the deathbed, the greatest regrets that people have, this is universal from multiple studies all around the globe. When people go in, researchers go in and sensitively ask questions, you know, of people learning from the wisdom of dying people. The one major source of regret that dying people have is not from what they have done. Actually, what they have done, they have found peace with what they have done the vast majority of the time. The number one regret is what the person has not done, has not started, has not completed. The conversation they knew they wanted to have, but they did not have. The woman, the person that they knew they loved, but they didn't stand up and win her heart over, win her hand with, you know, valiant sort of knight in shining armor courage, you know, like the good old romance stories of before. It's the business they did not start. It's the book that they knew they had in them, but they did not write. You will find when you ask the question with radical king of freedom, tap into that kingly archetype in you. The inner knowing, the inner child in you, that you just know your zone of genius. You know what you truly, you know, that lover archetype. You know the level of love and expression you truly want to express to somebody you love. You might want to reach out and that relationship that just went by the wayside and it just, there's an air of resentment. There's an air of, you know, emotion that you just, you're not feeling fully free. Maybe it's embracing that conversation, write that letter, forgive that person, do whatever process. But in answering the question, where are you lacking urgency? Sincerely ask it of yourself. You will find some area of your life where you're not embracing the full wisdom that the embrace and acceptance of death can bring. Because a lack of urgency is, you're just putting it off till tomorrow, till next year, till I retire, till the kids are reared, till I'm not that busy. I'll put it off to the holidays. But in the putting off, you're putting yourself at full risk of being hit with a sense of regret that you, well, you can always recover from. It takes deep inner work, trauma release, there are ways. But you don't really want, that fearless freedom does not come from loading up yourself with potential regret. It's full on engagement. So coming into landing at the end of another beautiful wholehearted, I'm feeling like a lot of beautiful energy and so much love for you. And I actually want to honor you and say thank you for, you know, holding space for me in a way of my vulnerable sharing, my opening my heart with you. It's very public, it's very vulnerable place, but I want to honor you and say thank you for, again, once more, you know, sharing space for me in my sacred expression in such a, pinnacle moment in my life, an initiatory journey in my life as I embrace this experience. So thank you for that. But in coming into landing, yes, I really do wish for you that you find a deeply meaningful answer to that question. Where in your life are you lacking urgency? It's my deepest wish that some part of your psyche will land before you a gift where you go, yeah, it's that person. I'll send that letter. I'll ring them. That book, first draft, tonight. I'll just get down, open up the Word document, boom, whatever gets down, and now it's started. Just get it started. That's the part of procrastination. Procrastination is at the core of, you know, living and dying with regret. Great intentions that lead you to hell. The one way of eliminating procrastination and thus regret from your life is just starting. This is like 101, the science of beating procrastination is just start. Once you get started, you're going, you're good. So my deepest wish is that you will find something of personal relevance, of deep meaning, that you can just start. Just start that, do that first step in that area of your life where you've been lacking urgency. Just go out for that one jog that you've been promising you would do, but it's been months or years and you're looking down at your belly and you're like, okay, or you're just not feeling fit. Whatever that fitness goal, that dietary thing where you're like, I'm just not eating good stuff, and you just order that good food and nourish your body and your soul. You express your love, or you open up and you request forgiveness from your queen for whatever it is you've done, because just there's that lack of urgency that you've been putting it off. A sense of urgency with parenting, where it's like, you know, the cat's in the cradle type experience. Was a song by Cat Stevens, where it's like you might be putting off parenting till, you know, another day comes, but do it now. Express that love. Make that time with your kids now. Might be 30 minutes, but be there. Impeccably there, without the phone, without busyness, without work in your mind. Be with them. Urgency now. The urge of your entire heart to be in the present moment now. Engaging with life. Setting down. Sowing seeds where fearless freedom follows you. You are the embodiment. You are a king of impeccable, beautiful, infinite freedom, because you live with such engagement with your present moment, never caught in past, never casting the fishing rod, the line out to the future where anxiety comes up. You just empty your heart now. Empty your love now. Express your truth now, so that at the end of today, you will die empty to today. Reawakening. It's my deep wish you reawaken, but as the great Tibetan Buddhist lamas know, it's like they put out the fire of the night before because their practice in relating with the omnipresent reality of death. Why did it put out the fire of the night before? Because they do not know. Will they wake the next morning to need that fire again? So their practice is, I will put out this fire because I do not know. And I am comfortable in the not knowing. So much love for life right now. Feeling just dropped into my body. So in my body. So much love for you, magnificent kings around the planet listening in. It's a ridiculous understatement to say that I appreciate your sacred time and attention and listening in and engaging with this deep, intimate conversation. My invitation is, I really want to create a deep, intimate connection within this movement. This podcast is at the forefront. I'm transitioning away from social media. So the podcast will be the front face of the movement, Kings for Freedom. My invitation is, you know, on this topic today, maybe there's a part that you've been lacking urgency and you'd love to share with me in a safe space, or whatever's coming up. I invite you to reach out at hello@kingsoffreedom.me. hello@kingsoffreedom.me. Reach out in a confidential, safe and sacred space. I'll receive whatever it is that you would, if you'd like to open your heart or open up for whatever has emerged within you. My invitation is make use of that. This is a movement of conscious connection between powerful men around the world. So I really want to make that available to you, to be of service to you and to connect beyond, as I say, this lonely interface of a microphone in front of me with a flashing blue light. I love connecting with you directly. So please, please feel free and to trust any impulse off you to reach out. I would love to hear from you and hear what is coming up for you. And if there's any way I can serve you, to be of service for you, magnificent men. We all are playing a sacred part in this unfoldment of consciousness, of the conscious masculine uprising of embodied, conscious masculinity in a beautiful, powerful way, like never before, reawakening times of times gone past when there was a more conscious, full, open-hearted embodiment of all the masculine archetypes, but then also not repeating the past, finding the most powerful, liberating, unapologetic way of embodying powerful masculinity for the present needs in the pristine present moment of now. Wishing you all a beautiful kingly day. Whatever has not been spoken today, may it be spoken again at another time when it is perfect and will serve perfectly. And whatever has been spoken today, I trust that it is perfect and has served impeccably as such. With deep bows and big love, go have a magnificent kingly day.
Thank you for listening to the Kings of Freedom podcast. To receive no BS proven strategies to unlock limitless levels of peace, power, and purpose as you lead your family and create your have it all life, sign up now to the Kings of Freedom email list. Find the link in the podcast episode description or at www.kingsoffreedom.me.